Welcome to the Mike Bell Real Estate Show. Mike is one of the nation's top realtors and is highly regarded as an authority in residential real estate sales. Mike Bell has nothing to sell but great wisdom. You're going to love this show. Now, here's Mike Bell.
Welcome to the Mike Bell Real Estate Show. We're here in the heart of Pasadena's Financial District. I am a licensed broker, licensed in California since 1993, and I'm with Keller Williams Realty. We're actually the largest brokerage in town by agent count. We have more agents than anybody else, also on a national level, too. We announced that earlier this year. I've been selling for about 20 years. I work on referral, and through the years, there has been just been so much confusing and flat-out wrong information about residential real estate. I have had I had a few clients that suggested I do something on the radio. Here I am on my soapbox. I hope you enjoy the show. We're here to give great information. In that respect, we're fortunate to today to have a fantastic guest on the show. We have Leslie Appleton Young. She's the vice president and chief economist for the California Association of Realtors. This is huge. It is a statewide trade organization with more than 150,000 members. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for coming.
My pleasure. It's in my neighborhood.
How long have you been the chief economist?
You know, I've been at CAR. This is my 30th year, and I've been in this position since 1989.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I've heard you speak many times at many events. You draw a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone's always interested in real estate, you know, and I think they do look to the California Association of Realtors as a kind of key source for what's happening in the market. And we do our best to provide accurate data and an accurate outlook on what's going on in the market.
Well, we're going to be with you for the next hour talking about, we're going to talk a little bit about realtor membership. Real estate fundamentals. Let's see where we go with all of this. We both have a pile of paperwork here, graphs, books in front of us. We're going to dive into all of this. Not all of it. We'll get to a lot of it. And we already have callers that called in, but we've asked them to call back in about 10 to 15 minutes before calling in again. So real quick to get to some quick business. This is a live call-in show, and we can be reached at 888-GO-FOR-IT. That's 888-463-6748. Again, you can call in to our show, ask questions, either myself or hopefully Leslie, at 888-463-6748. My personal cell phone, it'll ring after the show. You can try me at 888-401-1555. That's 888-401-1555. My email is mikebell@kw.com. The website is themikebellteam.com. I'm easy to find on the web. If you can't find me on the web, I don't know what to do. So we're here in 2013. And I want to talk real briefly about membership, realtor membership. I think it's kind of amazing. There's times where it's really easy to get a test date. And I think any state in the United States, if you want to get a broker's license or a sales license, you have to sit down for a state exam.
Right.
And I remember years ago when everybody was trying to jump into the business in 2004, 2005, something like 3 or 4 month delay just to be able to get a test date. And I don't know what the numbers are right now, but I think there's a lot of people trying to jump into the business now.
Well, it's I think the systems were pretty overloaded at the peak of the market. You know, everybody was trying to get in. And, you know, realtor membership and the number of licensees are two different animals. You know, there are quite a few people with licenses that are not practicing real estate. So they're involved in ancillary activities and so on and so forth. But the great, great majority of people that are licensed, that are active in doing real estate business, are members of the California Association of Realtors. You join your local association, then you're automatically brought into the state and national organizations. And we do a lot of things, but I think one of our primary missions is really to represent realtors and home ownership at the legislative and regulatory level, be it in Sacramento or in Washington.
Mm-hmm. No, there's always a. It seems like there's always a little bit of a lag between the peak of a market or the bottom of a market and membership.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting observation. When you look at the last, I don't know, 40, 50 years of data, what you see is there's a essentially a two-year lag between when the market peaks mm-hmm. and when our membership peaks. So this most recent cycle, the statewide housing statistics peaked in 2004 and 2005, mm-hmm. and our membership peaked in 2006. We had 211,000 California realtors. We had 550,000 California licensees. So, wow. You know, typically about a, you know, rough 30% to 30%, a third of the licensees are realtors. And then at the bottom that was reached last year, we went from 211,000 to around 152,000. So we lost about 60,000 realtors. And as we analyzed the data of people that did not renew, we found that there was really two groups. And one were kind of older seasoned agents who were kind of looking at this as maybe a good time to retire. Mm-hmm. And the other group were the younger, and I mean younger in terms of tenure in the business. Mm-hmm. So people that had been in the business 3 years or less often didn't make it or didn't make it at a higher rate than others. And I think that really is kind of a testament to just how difficult the market has been, number one, and how divergent it has been. You know, you went from a market in 04, 05, 06, where you essentially took the order mm-hmm. and that was it. And then all of a sudden you went into a heavily, heavily distressed market where you were either selling REO, that's real estate owned, you know, mm-hmm. taken back by the bank, or short sales. And that's a whole nother animal, totally different skill set. And now we're moving back into our latest data for California shows that almost 85% of the properties closing escrow are traditional equity transactions. So they're not REO. They're not short sale. In fact, that's about 16% of the market. It's very low. So again, a different skill set. So you either have to be highly, highly adaptable or you have to go in and out of the market based on what, if it needs what you're good at.
Well, I think there was a stat years ago, and I should probably check into this, but somebody was saying that on a national level, one in 21 people in Well, I think not national. I think it was the state level. 1 in 21 people had a real estate license at one point.
Yeah, at the peak of the market, and you know, it's a little bit of a bait and switch in terms of this industry because it is relatively easy to get a license. It is very, very difficult to be successful, and you know, in economics, we learn about Pareto's law, right? Mm-hmm. So 80% of the business is done by 20% of the Mm-hmm. agents. And honestly, in some areas, it's 90-10 or 95-5, you know, so there are people that are very, very good at this and they do it a lot. And then there are many people that do one or two transactions a year. And I'll just say it, I think they're dangerous, you know, because it is a very, very complicated transaction. In the last 40 years, for example, the listing agreement has gone from one page to, what is it now, Mike? How many pages is it?
Well, it depends.
Depends on how many addendums.
Well, it depends if it's a probate or trust sale, short sale, or just a regular equity sale, a regular traditional sale, but anywhere between four and with the addendums, it could be 15 pages long.
Right. And the files used to be a couple of sheets of paper, and now they can easily be 2, 3, 4 inches thick, again, depending on the type of transaction and where the property is located. So it's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for people that are doing it as a hobby. It is a full-time profession.
I don't know anybody that does this part-time. I think when I was growing up.
That's successful.
Yeah, right. That's successful. And I'm 43. But when I was growing up, my mom and her friends, that they had, a lot of them had, there were a lot of part-time agents. I don't see that at all. Well, I'm sure they're out there, but they're not selling.
No, exactly.
There's no way they can sell.
It takes a full-time commitment, and I don't really know any successful realtor who's working 40 hours a week. It's really much more than that.
I hate to say it. I work more than 40 hours a week. I'd love to get to down to 40, but But I love what I do. So it's, to me, it's not really work. It's, I have a blast. We get to work with really great people and be part of their life's journey in the biggest transaction they're ever going to have. And I always tell them my goal is to sell your house or help you buy this house. But honestly, the goal is to do the next one and the next one and the next one. I know you're not going to refer me or use me again, work with me again if I screw something up. And it's easy to screw up this business.
Yeah, I think one of the things I like to tell agents is set the stage for the client, because people tend to understand when things happen, but they don't like surprises. So really being able to set the context of the ups and downs of any transaction. And again, the last couple of years have been very, very difficult because of the low inventory and very high demand. So you've had multiple offers, and really aggressive multiple offers, like 10, 20, 30, 40. So when a buyer finally does close that transaction, I think the feeling of accomplishment is shared by everybody that's been part of it, because it's just not been easy.
Yeah, I actually talk about expectations and surprises. I have a listing that just got signed this morning from a gentleman who's up north, and he found me through the web. He heard the show, thought it was great advice on a lot of the other shows that we've had. I'm the second listing agent that he's hired. He just hired me this morning. He asked me to just send over the listing contract yesterday. So I just sent it over. And he called, and he was upset with me. He said that, I don't know what's really going on. I don't like surprises. Can you please detail exactly what you're going to be doing, when it's going to happen, how much it's going to cost me? It took a little bit of time. That's fine. It's almost 3 pages long. It was almost 100 things that I told him we're going to have to do.
Right.
And the reality is that there's not 100 things. There's almost 400 things that have to happen. If I screw up one of those things, you may not know about it, and you may not know that it costs you some money. And it may bite you in the behind later if something gets screwed up, one of the forms gets screwed up, or somebody loses some money. You have to be very, very careful with who you work with in this business in terms of real estate agents, because they may not know how to really guide that client and that transaction through. But, he's not upset anymore. He said he couldn't read the whole list, but I could have easily made it down. I could have easily done 300 or 400 items that you just have to do. And so now he's not going to have any surprises, and he understands where he's going to go. But it's too bad what happened with the first realtor that he hired. He ran him ragged with a 1-year listing, and just really, at least the market has gotten better, and at least he really hasn't lost any money. But the goal was to sell it last year, and it didn't happen.
Right. No, I think accountability is important in whatever aspect of your life you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And I think the value that the realtor brings to the table is often misunderstood. So the more transparent that can be in terms of a list and timelines and really understanding not only what's going to happen, but what can go wrong and how you fix it. Because I really do look at a good real estate agent as a problem solver. Mm-hmm. You know, if this were a point and click TurboTax type experience, I think it would have happened a long time ago. And it just is not in the cards as far as I can see.
The model hasn't changed.
Well, there's just so many things that can happen. You know, you're dealing with people and you're dealing with property, and there's so many moving parts when it mm-hmm. comes to financing if you need a loan. So yeah, it's challenging.
Well, I think that one of the slides that I was looking at when we had lunch was about how our income, generally income for real estate agents, has dropped significantly since the bottom.
Well, the dollar volume dropped about 60% peak to trough. And in California, you know, the median home price dropped 59% in 3.5 years. So that's really what that was all about. And the last year and, you know, this year and next year, we are seeing a recovery in dollar volume. But again, it's a highly competitive marketplace that is heavily skewed in favor of a few few in terms of market share number, but great in terms of market share, really leading people.
Well, we're going to go to a break now, our first break. We're here with Leslie Appleton-Young, Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors. And we'll be right back with the Mike Bell Real Estate Show.
Now, back to the Mike Bell Real Estate Show on TalkZone.com. Here's Mike Bell.
Welcome back to the show. You're here with Mike Bell, and I'm with Leslie Appleton-Young, the Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors. And we have our first caller, Leslie. We have Jane from Glendora. Hello, Jane.
Yes, hello. Hi, Mike.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm a long-time listener, but this is my very first time I've called in, so I'm very excited to talk to Leslie. Leslie, I'm a realtor and in the business for many years. There are always so many new agents, and so many leave the business so fast. I think I know why, but I wanted to know your thoughts on why this happens.
You know, it's Jane, nice to meet you, and it's a great question. And I have some data, some actual data to kind of talk about and get a handle on your question. We have just completed a 5-year study where we took 5 years ago 100 brand new agents. And we interviewed them every year for 5 years. And this isn't the first time we've done this kind of a panel study. We did it about 10 years ago as well. And I will tell you that the number one success factor for a new agent is having a broker who provides either one-on-one mentoring with the broker or with someone else in the office. So that seems to be, if I had to narrow it down to one thing, coming into a brokerage and having someone who teaches you the ropes, who holds you accountable, who helps you kind of get off the ground. And, you know, some brokerages do an excellent job of it, and others are kind of like, welcome, you're on your own. And for the new agents, having that support to figure out, I'm sitting at my desk, it's 9 o'clock on Monday morning, what do I do first, is really absolutely critical in their overall success. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, it's the new agents that have had the highest rate of attrition over the last 4 or 5 years, because it has been a difficult, frustrating market. And even today, I would characterize the market as very good, but it's a hard market, right? Yeah. So I think having that individual one-on-one help is probably the number one thing.
Thanks for the call. It's actually one of the reasons why I came over to Keller Williams, just because they have systems and models, and it's all about mentoring over here. It's great, because I'll tell you one thing. If you're the best brain surgeon in the world, you still go to classes. You still learn. You still need to learn and fine-tune what you're doing. You absolutely have. There's no realtor that knows it all. I mean, you go to classes all the time.
You
I'm
need
sure.
to stay current. I mean, the world is constantly changing, and the pace of change has been accelerating for the last 20 years. You know, we have to keep up.
I tell a lot of real estate agents that Keller Williams really isn't a real estate company. We're really an education company. We have so much training. And I have a lot of realtors that go, oh, you know, I don't need that. And I outsell almost all of them. But I go to training all the time.
Well, you know, one of the
I don't know. Is
surveys.
There a correlation?
Well, yeah. No, there is.
And it's frustrating.
One of the surveys that we do every year, we survey buyers and we survey sellers. And one of the questions we ask is, how many agents did you interview? 70% of the buyers interview more than one agent. 88% of the sellers interview more than one agent. And I think, that's very encouraging, because it means that more than one agent has an opportunity to go in and really show the value that they can bring to the transaction. And I think for those that don't interview more than one agent, they really ought to think about it, you know, because you really, every property is unique, every seller is unique, every buyer is unique. So there's somebody great out there for everybody, but it's often not the same person.
I think on a national level, those numbers are not as generous. On a national level, there's fewer people that interview more than one agent.
Yeah,
which is too bad.
Right, right.
I constantly have people ask me, what's your best advice? You know, you have the 60-second elevator speech. You know, this is what I tell people. The best real estate advice I can give you, interview 3 agents. We're different. We're all different, and you'll find very quickly, especially if you work with on referral, if you ask for referrals, you'll find very quickly that each agent has a different skill set.
Right.
And it's not about the brand. It's really about the agent.
Right.
And the same thing with in your field. We have another call. We have Kai from Walnut. Hello, Kai.
Hi, Mike. I just started listening.
Hi.
I really love your show. Hi, Leslie.
Oh,
this
thanks.
Has been really great information.
Well, thank you, Kai. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm thinking about getting my real estate license, but listening to your comments about how membership is going up and down, what do I need to worry about getting into this business? Some of the companies I talk to seem to want me to get my license and then just go work for them.
Well, I think you do obviously want to get your license, although I want to warn you that the correlation between what you learn in the classes that you take to get your license are not highly correlated with the skill set that you're going to need to be a successful agent. So that's one thing. Just look at getting the license as an opportunity to learn some things you'll never, you know, never really need but are interesting. And it's also kind of getting your ticket punched. But really the biggest decision that you're going to make is what company do I want to go with? And I would kind of echo Mike's earlier advice for buyers and sellers, and that would be interview at least 3 brokers. Yeah. There are many different companies. They are different in terms of size, in terms of geography, so on and so forth. But interview with them and see how much support you are going to get as a new agent. You know, do they have training programs that are offered, you know, consistently and encouraged and of high quality? Are there systems? Are there models? Are the people in the office supportive of newer agents? Is there someone you can partner with for the first year? I know a lot of successful agents who their first year out of the business, they were an assistant for a top producing team, for example, and learned a lot of the ropes that way. But just interview people with an eye towards, am I going to get enough experience this first year to be successful and to figure out, you know, how to fine tune what I'm doing to make it a successful business venture for me?
Thank you, Kai. I want to add to that. I really think the license, at least here in California, it's a great process to go through, but it's really a barrier to entry to get into. Now, as a broker, it was a full day of testing. It was 200 hard, apparently there were the hard multiple choice questions. And then you have the license for 4 years. At least in California, once you apply to take the test, I guess there's some database out there, and you have a lot of agents telling me that they get inundated with letters from brokerages.
Absolutely.
Telling them to come over.
Absolutely.
We've got this, we've got that. I know you know this stat, but on a national level, with all the surveys they did, that NAR survey where they send out 93,000 piece questionnaire to brand new home buyers, the brand matters 4% of the time in terms of the main factor for somebody to buy or sell real estate. It's the brand. So my advice when you're shopping for real estate offices is be cautious of the company that says the brand is going to help you, the name is going to help you. I'm sorry, I just don't see that. It's not part of my business. The stats are overwhelmingly saying that it's people do business with the person. It's not the brand. So find out what that company provides in terms of mentorship, tools, systems, models, support. Also find out if they're profitable. It's kind of important because the first thing I think it's a fair question. If you're going to work for that company, ask them if they're profitable. Because if they're not, guess what the first thing they do? They cut education usually. They cut a lot of stuff because we're, you know, as real estate agents, we're all, we're pretty independent. It's hard to get it's hard to get realtors into education. So it's a little bit easier to cut it because a lot of them are not going to miss it. It's too bad, but that's the way the business is. So I don't know if, Kai, are you still on the phone? Thank you for your call. Do you have anything to add to that, Leslie?
No, I couldn't agree more. I think education is absolutely critical, and there's lots of education providers out there. However, I do think the commitment from the broker and the other agents in the office is, and again, the research that we've done has shown that that really is a very critical component of success.
Well, there's some brokerages where if you go over to them, basically, if you're a new licensee, they make you the gopher. And you're out buzzing around and you're putting up lock boxes. And I don't think that's mentorship. At least I'm going to put a plug for our company. We actually have a mentoring department. We have three agents, very seasoned, and we have a whole bunch of free training with a big training room. And we every single Friday from 11 to 12, it's free. They go through the disclosures. They go through the contracts, all this, everything. It's fantastic. I didn't have that to the other brokerage. And I don't know of another brokerage that does that. They all do it, but maybe once or twice a year. We do it once a week here. It's a little bit different. And we actually have a big training room to do all of that. All right, you're an economist. Let's talk about numbers.
Okay.
So tell me about what's – I'd love to – I'm constantly talking with my clients the fundamentals of real estate, why home ownership is so important, what it does for our economy, and I'd love to just kind of ask you that. Why is it so important? Because there are some people that think, oh, just a pushy realtor trying to get me to buy a house. There's a lot behind that. There's a lot of facts behind why home ownership is so important to the economy and to your pocketbook.
Well, and I think most people really do understand that. And you have had a commitment in this country favoring home ownership through favorable tax treatment through the creation of Fannie Mae back in the 30s and Freddie Mac 30 years later to provide a affordable flow of capital to the housing sector, which has helped. And we've got the FHA program. So it certainly is in the fabric of our society, and it's probably an overused term, but the American dream, you know, typically does involve home ownership. And there's been a lot of talk, especially after the bubble and what has happened to people over the last 4 years about the American dream. And does it still really look like that? And, you know, every kind of analysis and survey that I've seen of late has shown that the appetite for home ownership, you know, is as strong as ever, you know, and it's, I think it's just important to recognize that it is a cyclical industry and a cyclical market. And, reduction in values just created new opportunities. So one of the things that happened in California as early as 2008 is that you had investors interested in buying properties in the Central Valley of California. You could buy at less than replacement costs. And the investors were really the canary in the coal mines in terms of this is an amazing opportunity to get into housing. And I would say until about six months ago, it was a no-brainer in terms of buying given prices and interest rates and so on. Currently, at least in California, you've had a pretty significant run-up in prices. You've had a recent increase in rates. So the math has gotten a little bit more challenging, but the demand far outstrips the supply.
Yeah, I want to talk on the next segment. We're going to go into a break now, but talk about following the investors and how that plays out. So you're here with the Mike Bell Real Estate Show. We're going to take a break here. We're with the chief economist for the California Association of Realtors, Leslie Appleton Young, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Mike Bell Real Estate Show on TalkZone.com. Here's Mike Bell.
Welcome back to the show. Mike Bell here with Leslie Appleton Young, the Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors. Thank you very much for coming, and I want to give a little plug for you. Leslie can be reached if you'd like to email her. Her email is leslieA@car.org, leslieA@car.org. The website's a fantastic resource. Unfortunately, most realtors don't look at it. That's my opinion. But I go to it. I use it. It's car.org. There's a for realtors, there's a special section just for realtors as a realtor benefit that we can get a little bit more data. But there's fantastic information in there. Now, you guys have a Facebook page.
We do. CAR Research Group. And we post every day either a kind of fun fact or a research report that we came out with or the National Association of Realtors came out with. So that's a good place to go as well.
Great. So how many hours a week do you – you travel a lot. You are
– We all do. I mean, CAR is a member-driven organization, mm-hmm. and we have our governmental affairs staff, our legal staff, and our economic staff devoting a fair amount of time to just being out in the field with our members.
Yeah.
And, you know, answering questions, educating, creating dialogue, forming relationships. It's just like the business that you're in, Mike. You know, mm-hmm. those connections are priceless. And it's what we do. And it's constantly changing. You know, the market's always changing. You've always got new regulations and legal things. One of our most
new forms, more and more forms.
Right. One of our most highly rated services, our legal hotline, where a member yeah. can call and talk to an attorney anytime, pretty much, you know, and get help.
That's a great service. Let me see. So on. So we were talking about following the investor.
Right.
And
right. And the investors have been, you know, the drivers of the recovery initially,
absolutely,
but certainly have also made it hard for first-time buyers. Yes. And I do think that the recent, you know, the run-up in rates and the recovery in prices, I mean, most areas are still below their prior peaks, but there are parts of California, communities in the Bay Area, for example, that are just shy of where they were in 2006, 2007. So you've had quite a recovery, in part driven by investor interest. In some areas, a significant part of that has been international money. Because, you know, one of the things that people need to understand is the very aggressive low-rate monetary policy that's been followed for the last 4.5 years has also created a world where if you've got cash, there's really only been two places to go, real estate or the equities markets. You know, there really wasn't anywhere else to do. And so you've had a lot of money coming in to take advantage of the fundamentals. And one of the things that also kind of hampered the market was that so many investors, at least until a couple of months ago, were renting the properties out instead of flipping them. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the cycles in the 80s and the 90s, you had a lot of, you know, buy, fix it up, and get it back on the market right away. And
mom and pop.
Yeah, and right. So you didn't have the big, you know, bulk transactions and hedge funds and so on and so forth. But this time around, what it's meant is it's really constrained inventory because they have been renting the properties out. You know, rates are low, prices are going up, the demand for rental units has been strong, especially mm-hmm. from people that maybe lost their homes, so they've got a ding on their credit, so on and so forth. So it's created I don't know, a unique recovery. and lately you are seeing, you know, investors, you know, the numbers don't really work so much anymore when you've had a 30% increase in housing prices and rates are going up. Mm-hmm. So they're leaving for other opportunities. And now we're going to get back to a market where I believe that the FHA, you know, down payment assistance programs are going to be very, very helpful. For FHA, it's really unfortunate, but they're expensive now. You know, they've had increase in the premiums and so on. So I think we're going to get back to a market where affordability is going to be a key factor.
And I remember I've been selling for 19 years, so I've been in and I've gone up and down. I've seen these cycles. What I don't remember on the last cycle when it started going back up, I don't remember hearing about single family residential as an investment vehicle. For example, like Warren Buffett, at his meeting that he had in Omaha, somebody asked him what he thought would be one of the best investments, and he said if he could, he'd buy 2,000 to 3,000 single family residences, fix them up, and rent them out, and not sell them for
right.
And But we're seeing this. This is happening. I think he bought 400 homes. He said if he could, he'd buy more.
Right. Everybody wants more.
Everybody wants more. But I don't remember hearing that before. And in the last cycle, there were institutional investors and mom and pops that were flipping properties, and that property went back on the market relatively quickly.
Right.
And we're not seeing that.
No.
It's a little frustrating. And a lot of it's not even hitting the open market. These are bulk sales that are happening.
Right. Although, again, it's changing, right? You have had, you know, rates up by a full percentage point the last couple of months and a rapid but a significant increase in prices. So you are starting to see more flipping activity. Mm-hmm. So they're only in it for the short term.
And what we had just talked about, is that good or bad for the market, the housing market?
You know, I typically shy away from that kind of a descriptor, because there's no doubt in my mind that the investors were absolutely critical to jumpstarting the California housing recovery. And the fact that they were willing to go into the Inland Empire and into the Central Valley and really get aggressive about buying properties really, really helped those communities. So it's a market correction. You know, when you look back at, let me just give you an example. In January of 2009, 30% of the properties that closed escrow were your traditional equity in the home sellers. 30%. Today it's 85%.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that.
Four and a half years ago, 60% of the market was REO. Mm-hmm. Today it's 5%. Mm-hmm. And short sales are now, you know, about, I don't know, 10% of the market. They've been as high as 25. So you've really had a 4.5-year period where the California market has just been rebalancing based on, you know, prices, incomes, and rates, and rents. And as I mentioned earlier, I think going forward, we're going to look at a more traditional environment where first-time home buyers are really going to have a tough time, not as much because of lack of inventory, but because of inability to get financing.
Mm-hmm. I have the listing board here. We have 19 listings. We do have first-time home buyers with 3.5% down that are beating investors on our properties. And it has a lot to do with the real estate agent. It has to do with communication. It has to do with understanding the basics of a transaction. And oftentimes, it just takes a little bit longer for a buyer who has a financing to be able to get a property versus. There's a lot of problems with cash transactions. Everybody thinks, oh, cash is king and it's super quick and easy. There are a lot of potholes. I have a lot of realtors that listen to the show, and I bet you they're all nodding their head right now. You have to be very careful with your cash transactions still. For one thing, it's not always all cash. You're laughing.
Right.
we have another caller, Jeff from Los Angeles. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You got Mike here, and you got Leslie. What can we help you with?
Well, my question was for Leslie in that we've all seen the home prices really skyrocketing the past couple of months here in Los Angeles, and I'm having a hard time understanding what are the economic factors that are driving that, and do you see that continuing for the near future?
You know, it's starting to change. I think we really are at a tipping point in the market, and the really quick answer to your question has to do with inventory. You know, we've had a very, very constrained inventory for the last 2 years. In fact, the market really started to take off in California in March in the spring of 2012. So when you have a, you know, ignited demand that's ignited by attractive prices, low rates, can't really park your money anywhere else, and it's time to go in, meeting a constrained supply, you're going to get upward pressure on prices. I do want to just caution that the median home price is impacted by the change in the mix of what's selling. So it overstates the change in prices if you're getting a big shift. So in the, earlier in the show, I went through the change in the share of real estate owned, which tends to be lower price properties, short sales, with which tends to be a little bit higher, and traditional equity sales that are at the upper end of the market. Mm-hmm. So in the last year and a half, you've seen a very significant reduction in distressed properties and a consequent expansion, significant expansion in upper end properties. So that's why, you know, our July data had a 30% increase in the statewide median home price. And as I try to explain, you know, that doesn't mean that a home in Los Angeles increased in value by 30% over 12 months. You know, the actual increase was probably 10%, maybe high single digits, low double digits, something like that. But the median's impacted by the change in the mix. So it's really important to kind of hone in on that. And I always kind of say work with your local realtor, whatever area you're looking at is really going to be able to show you the comps, and you're going to be able to see what's happening to specific properties. The Case-Shiller price index that comes out for the 20 U.S. metropolitan areas is really a good measure of actual appreciation, because it's the same properties every time, you know, so it's not impacted by the mix. So that's kind of a long way of just kind of going back to my original answer to your question, was you just had very strong demand and restricted supply, and it put, you know, upward pressure on prices. And as we look to the second half of 2013, I think you're going to continue to see prices go up, but at a much less aggressive year-over-year rate than you've seen in the last year.
Well, thanks for your call, Jeff. I appreciate
something
it.
Now.
What was that?
So maybe
should
I
you
can
buy
something now?
Well, exactly. Exactly. There's going to be more inventory on the market. I think the investors are either flipping or exiting, and there should be a little bit more breathing room.
Get a good realtor. All right. That's the first piece of advice, though, before you jump into this. We're going to go into our last break, actually. We're here with on the Mike Bell Real Estate Show. We're here with Leslie Appleton Young, Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back to the Mike Bell Real Estate Show on TalkZone.com. Here's Mike Bell.
Welcome back to the show. We're here with Leslie Appleton Young, the Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors. Thank you, Leslie. I want to segue into, I want to go back and give a little bit of advice for somebody who's thinking about buying or selling. This is a little tip. Ask your prospective agent for an absorption analysis. Just say the words absorption analysis. A good agent is going to understand what that is. A good agent is going to be technologically savvy enough to be able to pull that. And basically, an absorption analysis is an understanding of the inventory and how long it takes for that inventory to get gobbled up. And that's a very, very important indicator. That really tells you what supply and demand really is, what's going on. And most agents ought to be able to give you that analysis over a 1 or 2 year trend period. That's a very vital piece of information. I think it's almost better than comps. Everybody, it's easy to pull comps. It's harder to pull absorption data. And we were talking about how important the data is out there. I mean, there's a lot of confusing stuff out there. And so you have to be careful with, you know, if you're reading a headline that says sales are up or sales are down, if they're cherry picking the data, as you've seen, I think you have to be careful.
Well, I think the other thing is the market, you know, real estate is local is kind of a common mantra. But you've got articles on the Florida market, which still has a very, very high proportion of distressed properties because they're a judicial foreclosure state. So any foreclosure has to go through the courts, and it takes a couple of years if it's quick, you know.
Huge line
and
line.
So someone reads that and thinks, oh, well, that's what's going on in Southern California, as an example, and it's not at all. You know, we don't have much in the way of those types of properties anymore. So local areas vary very, very significantly.
We have a zip code in this area, San Marino, that never went down in price with the downturn.
Right.
Never went down, but if you go about 5 miles directly north northwest of that city, there's an area that was completely opposite that just unfortunately tanked. So it's all local.
Right.
It's all local. So I want to go through some of your paperwork that you've
okay.
got. You've got
sure.
a lot of important graphs.
We follow a lot of statistics, a lot of data points.
What's going to continue driving this market? What are the important fundamentals?
You know, housing affordability is made up of three key variables. So you've got prices, you've got rates, you know, what you're paying for financing, and you've got income growth. So that's, you know, how affordable is housing? What proportion of the households in a given area can afford to buy the median priced home is really one important indicator. I think the other thing I'd like to take this opportunity to talk about is just the demographics. The fallout from the Great Recession was that nationally we have about 2 million fewer households than we would have had without the recession. And when I speak, I ask if anybody in the audience knows of a household where a college graduate has had to move back in with their parents because of the lack of a job. And not only do I get hands raised, but I often get a lot of smiles because it's actually their college student that has had to move back in. So because of the lack of job opportunities, you've had a significant reduction in household formation. So as we look forward, housing affordability is going to be important, but household formation is also going to be important. And that's why the, you know, kind of continued strength of the housing market, especially as investors see opportunities other places, is really directly tied to the health of the economy and job growth, right? So getting healthy job growth so that kids can afford to live on their own, that they can mm-hmm. really think realistically about getting married and having families and so on, that's going to be the future of the demand demand for housing.
Jobs. Yeah, I understand. One of the things we touched on really quickly is the amount of foreclosures that are out there. Here it is 2013. It's been like this since 2012. I have numerous investors call me asking me if I've got foreclosures because they keep reading about how there's still thousands and thousands of foreclosures out there. And we had talked about this during lunch about how just because a house is in the foreclosure process doesn't mean that it's going to get foreclosed on.
No, and
what
you know,
happens?
Well, here's an interesting statistic. So way back in the fourth quarter of 2009, and this is data from CoreLogic, mm-hmm. about 35% of the mortgages in California were underwater. Mm-hmm. So the loan amount exceeded the value of the home. It took 4 years, but 4 years later, that number was 25%. It's currently around 20%. So the point is, as home prices have appreciated and the rate of appreciation has accelerated, more and more of these underwater houses are becoming above water, right?
Exactly.
So that's just reducing the supply of distressed properties in general. But the other thing that's happening is that properties that go into the foreclosure process, so they have a notice of default filed, there's an auction date that's been set, more and more those properties are selling in a short sale, right? So they don't end up as an REO. Or there's a loan modification, right? So the HAMP program, even though it's never gained a lot of traction, but you've got, you know, loan modifications, the HARP program. So those kinds of things have really reduced the number of properties coming out of the foreclosure pipeline from what went into the foreclosure pipeline. And you've seen it very dramatically in California because of our very rapid rapid price appreciation. So that's something else to really, really think about. We had you know, 11.6% increase in the statewide median price in 2012. We had a 27.1% increase in 2013. And as I noted earlier, you want to localize that data and look at comps and so on. But the point is that the demand exceeds supply and you've got upward pressure on prices, and that's helping the remaining part of the recovery that needs to get done.
One of the services that I provide is I do get phone calls from around the nation. They say, I would love to hire you, but you're in Pasadena. I know how to find a really good real estate agent. And it's not all about if they blog. It's not all about if they have a nice website. There's fantastic realtors that have almost no website, but they're fantastic. I have a way of finding them. So if you're listening and you're outside of my area and would like to find somebody like me, give me a call. I will find you at least two names of somebody who's very local, who's got great references, but that's a free service that I provide. And that's, like you said, it's all about local expertise and using a professional. We've got a few minutes left, and we're going to be having I have some fantastic shows coming up. We're going to be having I'm trying to get a member of the CAR's Crisis Response Team, California's Association of Realtors Crisis Response Team. What's a crisis response team? You know, Leslie. Well, it's we've all seen those 60-minute episodes where the FDIC comes in and takes over a bank. Well, CAR actually has a team that goes into loan centers or even real estate offices and takes them over, raids them and grabs their files and pulls evidence out for – I mean, this is the worst of the worst real estate agents or the brokerages or worst of the worst loan up.
The Bureau of Real Estate.
Yeah, the Bureau of Real Estate. Does that.
Yeah. It used to be the Department of Real Estate. Yeah. Now it's under Consumer Affairs, the Department of Consumer Affairs. So it's the Bureau of Real Estate. And Wayne Bell is the new commissioner of the Bureau of Real Estate and just a fabulous, fabulous kind of watchdog for the industry.
Wonderful. So we're going to have a whole bunch of other folks. But Leslie, thank you. I appreciate the show.
My pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. I can't believe it's over already, right?
We should do this again. There's a lot to cover here. Thank you very much. And you're listening to the Mike Bell Real Estate Show, where we'll be back with you next week. And thanks for listening. Give me a call anytime. Take care.
The opinions expressed in the Mike Bell Real Estate Show are solely those of the host and do not reflect the opinions of anyone at TalkZone.com, Keller Williams Realty, any board of realtors, or anyone for that matter. Always hire a real estate attorney when making real estate decisions. Do not try any of this at home.